they're longtime friends.
Let me tell you something real quick about Dibs that I'm sure not everybody knows.
And first-time partners.
Hang in there, big guy. There'll be brighter days ahead.
Now, these two homegrown Bay Area boys finally come together to take over sports talk.
Get the hell off of my doorstep.
Major League Baseball, you stink.
It's Willard and Dibs. On 95.7, The Game.
Welcome in, Willard and Dibs, on a Wednesday here on 95.7 The Game. No Mark Willard, it's Dan Dibley, FB Santangelo, Mark Randy with you for a third straight day as we're now nearly a full day removed from the trade deadline. Last night, the Giants right off the trade deadline, they lose at home to the Oakland A's by a final score of 5-2. A rough beginning to the final third of the season for the Giants, and the night only got worse when literally everyone around them in the wild card standings won. The six teams ahead of them, the one team behind them all won, including the Padres, who had an epic come-from-behind victory over the Los Angeles Dodgers. But the Giants, they fall to the A's, and their playoff chances take a hit with that loss. Welcome in, guys. Dibs, FP, and Grandy here filling in for Mark Willard, who's off this week spending some vacation time out in Hawaii. Good to be back with you guys once again, but it's hard for me to be too happy after what we watched from the Giants last night. 5-2 loss. The A's, they came in, they've been playing good baseball, and they made the Giants look like a bad baseball team last night. JP Sears was great. They hit four home runs. Robbie Ray in his second start off of Tommy John surgery wasn't terrible, but wasn't great by any stretch, and it was just kind of lifeless inside of Oracle Park.
Yeah, and you could take a victory lap, not as...
No. There's nothing to victory lap about
there
here.
There is, and you can put aside your Giants fandom, and what you said yesterday, and Guru said you were in your bag and you were passionate about, you know, what they did. There was no direction at the deadline, and you come out of the deadline and you play like that. It really backs up what you were saying about not only this team but this regime. And
so if
where
they win 12
the
to
Giants,
12-0 tonight, he's wrong.
Yeah.
So the Giants win 12-0 tonight's wrong, and then we come back in and say Grandy was full of crap.
Overreact to every single game.
Is this your first day in Sports Talk Radio, FP? I thought you had a little bit more of a track record.
It might be my last day.
Yeah, it is this week, because you're about to bounce, but that's how it works. You know, Grandy has a passionate take, and then the team that he loves comes out and plays flaccid baseball, and I'll say it, that was a flaccid effort. Your offense stunk, and your pitcher, who's a part of the best rotation in baseball, he gave up four bombskis. That's not good. And you can...
Couldn't put him away last night.
No, couldn't put anyone away. And, you know, you keep hanging around like Teddy KGB and Rounders, and, you know, you're going to have a team that hits the long ball do damage.
Well, let me get something straight here. Last night seemed lifeless for sure.
No doubt.
That was a really hard watch.
It was rough.
For sure. It didn't seem like a Bay Bridge series games, because those have been weird, and they get weird throughout the years, like good weird. Like, those are usually fun to watch,
yeah.
Right? And it just had a big thud to it, especially after we talked about it all day, and trade deadline, and these guys know, and I don't know if they were lifeless because somebody didn't walk through the door yesterday, and they're like, are we trying? I don't know, because I didn't go to the game. I wasn't around it yesterday. I have no idea. But it's not like they're trying to suck. It's not like that lineup yesterday was trying to strike out, even though I would say it didn't seem like they were trying not to strike out. Like, there wasn't a lot of two-strike adjustments. And I told you guys yesterday that Fitzgerald at the top of the order has too much swing and miss for me. He struck out a couple of times last night. He swung and missed through a lot. Like, I want my leadoff guy with speed to put the ball in play. Like, he's the one guy, I know, 8 home runs in 10 games. That's fun to talk about, but I don't think that's who he is. I don't think he's Barry Bonds 2.0. I think he's a really good baseball player that could be an everyday shortstop. If he can learn bat-to-ball skills and put the ball in play with his speed, he's a potential all-star, but not right now. He swings and misses too much. And I don't know what J.P. Sears had going on yesterday, but it was 92, 91, and they were swinging at it like they were swatting at 105. And I would, and I know he had to change up, and maybe that made it speed. Whatever. Like, I didn't see a lot of adjustments made last night. And I was told by somebody with the Rockies, and I think I said this on the air yesterday, that they don't believe in a two-strike approach. And I said, oh, really? Like, I've watched all four games this weekend. But, like, so there's teams in baseball now that, because of the metrics and the analytics, that think that you can still do damage with two strikes. example for the A's. They hit, what, three home runs with two strikes last night? And so they don't preach two-strike approach. But I will, as long as I'm alive on the face of this earth, no matter how the game of baseball evolves, will believe in battling, fighting, scrapping, and clawing with two strikes. And do whatever you can to put the ball in play. Because you never know what's going to happen if you hit a 14-hopper to shortstop. In situations where you need to put the ball in play, especially with an exclamation point.
I want to go back to something that you talked about a little bit during the crossover and also yesterday and Monday, FP, and it was when you're in a clubhouse, especially around the deadline, and maybe you're in a situation similar to the Giants are in where you're in the race for a playoff spot and you're fighting and maybe things aren't going great, but you know how important every single game is. And the deadline happens. You ship someone off. Jorge Soler leaves. And I think Elliot Ramos last night was quoted as being surprised. He was shocked to see Jorge Soler leave. Whatever, whether the team took a hit emotionally for that or whatever the case is. But you get through the deadline and you have a chance to reset. Deep breath. Okay, we know we're all here for the rest of the season. Our president of baseball operations just said we have the best pitching rotation in baseball, whether you believe that or not. He said it publicly. That's got to fire you up a little bit. You have another young guy coming up in Marco Luciano who had some success with the bat when he was here earlier in the season. It's got to kind of fire you up, get you going a little bit. You get out of the deadline. All right, here we go. Bay Bridge series. This is important. We're in a race. We got to go out and start this final third of the season hot. And then you have a performance like that, as you were talking about, lifeless, and it was a struggle, and there wasn't that same environment and the intensity inside of Oracle Park. So what is it like in the clubhouse after a game like that, where you kind of maybe you go into the game with a little extra emotion and then you come out and you just kind of get that gut punch of falling 5-2 to a team that comes into your house where you feel like this is go time and you just can't quite get it done? I imagine that's a little bit more emotional than any other just normal loss throughout the course of a season.
I mean, possibly, but I think we're assuming that there was all that stuff before the game. What if the opposite end of that it was
bad from the beginning?
Maybe devil's advocate, they were bummed about the lack of action during the trade.
And that's a whole other problem,
what
then, right?
They were bummed that Jorge Soler got traded, and they're like, what are we doing? I thought we were going to get better, and we did really nothing, and now we're going to count on a guy that's unproven. What if that was the vibe, and that's what you saw last night?
That, to me, is more likely the vibe when you have a guy who's been leading off, and he actually has been hitting well for the past month, and now he's the guy who's traded. And, forget Cobb, who hasn't pitched all year, and, Jackson, who struggled. But Jorge Soler has been your leadoff hitter, and a guy who's actually shown signs of being the hitter that you've expected him to be all along, and he's the one who gets dealt? That's got to be a blow emotionally in the clubhouse, I would imagine.
It is, from a sense that, I've had friends traded, and all of a sudden you're going to lunch with them and going to coffee with them and having beers on the road with them after a game, and they're not there.
And they're just gone.
They're gone. It's weird. And you kind of get desensitized to it, but if it's your buddy, it's all, I mean, I don't want to equate it to a death, but it's kind of like the baseball equivalent to losing a friend. And then he's there and we do everything together. Like, we go to the bar after the game. We have two beers, three beers, whatever our max is. Day game tomorrow, we're just going back to the room. We have coffee in the morning. We go to lunch together, like meet in the lobby at 12:15 for lunch. We'll have lunch, walk to the yard. And that's your guy. And then he's gone. And you're like, wait, what? And you're just kind of lost. I remember Arky Cianfrocco was that guy for me. We did everything together in AAA. He's my best friend in the world. And he got traded to the Padres at the trade deadline. And I was just like lost. And I played like crap. I went like 1-for-20. I like had trouble getting up for the games. I knew I had to, because you have to be a professional. I don't know that that was the case. Grandy, the scenario that you painted should have been the case. Like, okay, it's us. Let's go. Us against the world. Like Michigan football this year. Like us against everybody. Michigan against everybody. Giants against everybody. Let's go. And if they're not doing it up there and they're not getting us people up there, then screw them. This group in the clubhouse is good enough. But then, then you face a guy that, I don't know, that 92 looked like 107 and he was shoving last night and people weren't putting the ball in play. And that can make a team look way more lifeless than they really are when you're swinging and missing a lot and the guy's shoving it up your, I don't know. I hope they rebound tonight with a win. I hope they start playing good baseball on a consistent basis. But last night the A's were the better team and they got thump in their lineup.
They do.
Like, that's how you swing with two strikes.
Lawrence Butler and, I mean, Brent Rooker has quietly had like maybe the fifth best season of any hitter in baseball. He's been incredible this year, Brent Rooker, and Lawrence Butler the last month, like the AL player of the month.
Rooker's home run was like halfway up the bleachers in left center field.
He didn't make it. It looked pretty easy for him.
And he swung easy, too. It wasn't like he was swinging out of his ass. I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah, he's got power, 26 home runs. And I wonder if the fact that Jorge Soler is one of the more veteran Latino players, too, what that does to younger Latinos, you know, in a clubhouse where, you know, you've got Luciano and Matos and Ramos and young guys, even Doval, guys who are younger in their career. And Soler is probably the OG among that clique. And I know it's not always about cliques in a clubhouse, but when you've got a five or six Spanish-speaking players, it's hard to find somebody who is really the veteran. If that person goes, it's got to change your feeling about what's going on in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, they all sit together in the back of the plane, like every one of them, and they have a great time, and they added life and energy. And I even made a comment that when they were playing really well, that the Latin contingent in the clubhouse has added so much vibe and confidence and energy to this ball club. And when they get on the plane, it's just like they're having a great time in the back of the plane. And yeah, I mean, that could be a thing, Dibs, for sure. I mean, here's the thing. You're a professional athlete. You get paid lots of money. If your buddy gets traded, your buddy gets traded. You still got a job to do. You got to go out there and perform on the highest level, in front of the bright lights, and in front of the crowd, and your independent race, you're in a wild card race, whatever the hell it is. You have to find a way to not let your emotions and compartmentalize that, put it in a Tupperware and leave it in the clubhouse. So when you cross those lines, like I said, it's opportunity for all these kids yesterday. Look at that. I mean, one of my friends said it was the Sacramento A's versus the Sacramento Rivercats last night. I'm like, it was a big league game last night. So all those kids in the lineup, that's an opportunity. One at bat in the big leagues is an opportunity. You can't just be like, okay, well, it's our job now, and you know they traded away the old guys, and they're going younger, and this is my job. You got to go out there and play like you're playing for your freaking life every single day, your baseball life every day. If you're a kid, to establish yourself, there's no jogging to first. There's no taking an at bat off mentally. It's every at bat's the last at bat I'm ever going to have at the big leagues because I'm trying to establish myself here, and I'm trying to show the organization, if not this organization, another organization, that I'm an everyday freaking major league player. And if you have a game where you just like swing and miss, jog to first base, don't make a play, that can't happen. It's got to be every single day. There's two things you can control in baseball: your attitude and your effort. The rest you can't. You can't control the ball off your bat. You can't steer it once you make contact. Once you let go of the ball as a pitcher, you can't that's it. So you control what you can control in a game, but there's so many uncontrollables. So for me to see a bunch of young guys kind of go out there last night, I know they're not overmatched. I've seen Tyler Fitzgerald hit 100. I've seen Casey Schmidt hit 100. So I don't know what was going on last night. I think Elliot Ramos had a decent game. He hit that ball up the middle. He had a 9-pitch at-bat end and a terrible call. Well, I don't know if it was a terrible call. It was a borderline.
Maybe the second strike call was worse than the third strike call.
I don't know what the magic word was that he said.
It must have been something.
There was one under his breath that he said. Because you know how you know? It's because Bob didn't go nuts. I thought Bob Melvin was going too. And when Bob stayed in the game, whatever the answer he got was the right answer.
What did he say to you? He said this.
Oh, okay. I'll go back to the dugout.
I'm going to argue for a couple more minutes and go back to the dugout.
Well, I'll stand up for my player here for a sec, and then I'm going to head out.
I don't know.
I mean, to your point, we got to hit a break here in just a second, but there was a play. I don't know. It was a sixth inning or seventh inning. David Villar hit that fly ball down the right field line. I don't know if he's thinking it's going to go foul or if he thinks that maybe he got it and it was going to be a home run. He's just standing there halfway between home and first. Suddenly it drops in fair, and he barely gets into second base. There wasn't that energy. There wasn't that effort. There wasn't that, my butt's on the line here. And I don't know if that's permeated through the entire clubhouse. I also don't want to overreact to just one game. I mean, it's an 162-game season, and bad nights happen. But last night was certainly a bad night for the San Francisco Giants, and they're going to have to bounce back today if they want to get that taste out of their mouth. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs, FP, and Grandy with you. We got a whole lot more coming up. We're going to react more to what Farhan said before the game last night, after the trade deadline, and we got a lot to get into with the San Francisco Giants. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, check out how the Morning Roast reacted to the Giants' moves at the deadline and last night's uninspiring loss to the A's. That's all on the free Odyssey app. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.
95.7 The Game.
No Mark Willard this week. He's off on vacation in Hawaii, so it's Dan Dibley, FB Santangelo, Mark Randy with you on this Wednesday. The Giants fall yesterday to the Oakland A's 5-2 on deadline day after they make a handful of moves. Jorge Soler, Luke Jackson, Alex Cobb out, a couple of minor leaguers, an injured reliever in, along with Mark Canha, who's familiar with Matt Chapman, familiar with Bob Melvin, familiar with the Bay Area. He was an Oakland A. He's a San Jose guy, went to Cal Berkeley for his collegiate years. He was not available for the Giants last night. Bob Melvin did say last night he expects him to be in San Francisco tonight for this game. The final Bay Bridge series, Giants and Oakland A's. Giants need to bounce back after last night's frustrating loss. And let's talk about some of the things, guys, that Farhan said yesterday leading into the game, because I know we were all on the air when it happened, and we were listening to it all as it was happening live, and we were trying to react in the moment. But it kind of takes some time to let all these comments wash over you and really absorb the things that he was saying. And I think the guys earlier today, Bonte and Shasky and Evan and Guru, did a really good job of kind of recapping everything. A lot of it just didn't quite sit right with me. And I get you try to amp up your guys, and it's kind of like Dibs and FP that I was getting at in that first segment. You know, you're complimentary of your team, and you try to encourage them going into the final third, and you say you got the best pitching staff in the league. But then you look at what Robbie Ray did last night, and it's really not a knock on Robbie Ray. The guy just made his second big league start off Tommy John surgery. Him giving up four runs in four plus innings, like, that's not that crazy of an outcome, even for the best pitcher in the world coming off of Tommy John surgery. It's not going to be smooth sailing. So if we're going to focus on a part of what Farhan said, perhaps we focus on that comment about the best rotation in baseball. I think maybe in theory they could be, but in practice you've got so many bumps in the road for a number of these guys that it's going to be difficult for them to pitch up to that potential, because coming off of injury, dealing with pitch limits and all that. There's so many different things here.
Song in there as well. I just don't know what you guys expect him to go up there and say, because he's in a spot where he knows things have not gone as well as he would have liked, and he knows that his job is in at least some sort of a jeopardy. And so you go through the deadline, and he makes the moves that he makes, and what's he supposed to say? Well, you know, really, I just wanted to get rid of some salary to show my ownership that, you know, we're going to try to get below the tax, because we're not very good, and I know we're not very good, and I messed it up. I mucked the whole thing up, and geez, you guys are right. I'm not very good. He's going to go out there and talk about opportunity, and I had somebody actually send me a text saying every time he used the word opportunity, I took a drink, and by the end of the press conference, my friend was hammered, absolutely hammered. But he's going to have to portray it in the most positive way, which is these moves were made to give opportunity, and boy, look at our pitching. We've got multiple Cy Young Award winners, and we got the guy who came in second last year, and we have two young guns. Our pitching is amazing. Watch all this happen. I don't know what he was supposed to say. The only thing he could do is go up there and do what he did. And he knows that if it doesn't go well, if Robbie Ray gives up four home runs and you lose to the A's, and maybe you lose again today, and then you go out and you lose two of the next three, or you lose five of the next seven, whatever that happens, he knows how this ends. So I don't fault him for anything that he said, because what was he supposed to say?
You can be complimentary without saying they're the best rotation in baseball, right? I mean, we got a pretty good staff. We hope that, you know, they stay healthy and things go well. And if things work out that way, they break our way, we have a chance to make a run here. But, I mean, you look at the Mariners, who are in Boston right now playing. You look at the Phillies. Those are pretty good staffs who have been great all season long. I have a hard time believing that this Giants rotation, that Farhan believes this Giants rotation is the best staff in baseball.
Like I said, the names alone and the resume alone, you could make that argument, right? You got two-time Cy Young Award winner, one-time Cy Young Award winner, and runner-up. But that was then, this is now. So these guys have to go out and get the job done. And I think that was, I'm not sure. And I'm with you, Grandy. Like, we were real time, and we were arguing about crap yesterday on the air and having a good time doing sports talk radio. It was all in good fun. And when I went home and started to think about it,
same.
There was some awkwardness in it, right? Just a little bit of awkwardness, and it was almost like he was trying to convince us that what he did or didn't do, or whatever you want to call that trade deadline, was the right thing.
I think he might be trying to convince himself too.
honestly,
or other people,
or both.
But that said, the young players that have been given the opportunity have taken advantage. And if that's kind of the way you're going, that's a huge gamble to try to get into the playoffs with unproven DH. Like, I don't. Can you look, Dibs, fact checker, how much Marco Luciano DH'd in AAA? I would imagine he didn't do a whole lot of it because he's got to work on his defense. If this is hard to explain. Let me try to articulate this. DHing is hard if you've never done it. Because you walk up and hit.
And then you sit down for a couple innings.
You don't do anything. So you can only contribute to the game one way. So if I went 0 for 4 and I made a diving play, or maybe I walked my fourth time up, stole the base, scored a run, I was 0 for 3, and I made two good plays that saved runs, like that's a good day in the big leagues.
You feel like you contributed to the win.
I helped to win. Yeah. So when you're in the minors, you got to put up your own numbers to get to the big leagues. When you're in the big leagues, you got to do something to help your team win every night. Whatever it is, you got to find a way to help your team win. So for a 22-year-old or however old he is, 22, 23, to like swing once, strike out, go think about that strikeout for 35 minutes, then come back up, strike out again, go think about that for 35 minutes. If you have a bad at-bat, there was an old saying, if I ain't hitting, you ain't hitting. So I'm going to steal hits from people. If I'm not hitting, I'm going out there and I'm going to play some defense. And you don't think about the bad at-bat. You can't think about the bad at-bat because if you take that out on defense with you, the ball's going to find you, you're going to make an error. So for a kid to DH, Dibs, how many?
Only twice in the bigs, and I'm not seeing it in the minors so far.
So, but this is something I didn't talk about yesterday that I did think about after.
Four games in Sacramento
as a DH. It's an art to learn how to, from a mental standpoint, maybe even a physical standpoint, Grandy and Dibs, to like, do I hit the tee between at-bats? Do I go up and have a beer in the clubhouse between at-bats? Do I sit on the bench and root for my teammates between at-bats? When it gets four hitters away, do I take five hacks off the tee? I DH'd a handful of times in the minor leagues, and I could not stand it. Hmm. It's like pinch hitting four times.
Well, it's weird because I feel like the general consensus by most people, I don't think I heard that opinion from anyone, but it makes a lot of sense. The general opinion was, let's DH him, take the pressure off of him. It'll be easier. He doesn't have to worry about fielding. We'll deal with that in the offseason. We're just going to figure out over these next 2 months if he has the bat to stick in the big leagues, and then we'll figure out where he's going to play defensively in the offseason and get him ready for second base, for the outfield, for first base, wherever you're going to want to put him beginning next year. But that's an interesting thought, because maybe the DH spot isn't quite as simple or straightforward as we all kind of thought it was.
And I think it takes more of a mature and an older player's mentality, somebody who's been in baseball and knows exactly what it takes to get ready for each and every at-bat. And you had me thinking about the difference playing golf between driving a cart and walking, because when you take a cart, you hit your shot and you drive up to your ball, and now you're sitting there waiting because the group in front of you, and maybe they're walking, and now you have to sit there and wait, and so you're a little bit out of routine, and you get out of the cart, and you try to get loose, and then you go to hit your shot. But if you're walking, you hit your ball, and you put your bag on your shoulder, or you have a pull cart or whatever, and then you walk up, and the rhythm of that is different from the rhythm of when you're driving in the cart. And so if you're 22, and he'll be 23 here in a couple of weeks, I'm sure that he's really thinking about every at-bat and, you know, doesn't have the veteran presence to know that, okay, you know, in about 40 minutes, I'll get a chance to do it again. And so maybe in 20 minutes, I'll go take a couple swings off the tee, or maybe I'll go loosen up again and get ready for my next at-bat.
My analogy is what for us, you say something stupid, which I did about 10 times yesterday. But right when you're done saying something stupid, you go sit out in that other room for 30 minutes. And you think about the thing you said stupid on the air, and then you come back on the air, and maybe you say something stupid again, and then you got to go sit in that other room for 30 minutes. That's kind of what going up there and striking out as a DH is. You can't go out there in the outfield and make a diving play, or look at people in the stands and interact, or talk to an umpire, or talk to a base runner, or whatever it is. Talk to the catcher. I mean, you just hit, you go back, you hit, you go back. It sounds easy, right? That's all I got to do is hit. You just go up there and swing as hard as you can. But then for a young kid that's never done it, there's an art to it. It's like, that's why veteran pinch hitters are better than rookie pinch hitters, because they know how to get ready for the pinch hit. They know how to stay ready between pinch hits. Say they haven't played in a week, they go down and watch a bullpen, they get their timing right. So the older guys that stuck around, like John Vanderwall, and I'm trying to think of some of the better pinch hitters, Matt Stairs, in the history of the game, they were veterans. They knew how to stay
ready. Dave Hansen?
Dave Hansen, yes.
Thank
you. He was one of the best pinch hitters. Maybe the best pinch hitter
Manny
ever.
Manny Mota.
Back
to our era.
And when they were kids, they probably didn't know how to do it. But when they're, you know, the veterans, 8, 9 years, they have a routine. I'm sure Soler had a routine because we talked about his glove that I saw on the bench that hadn't, it was neglected. It was just sitting there on the bench like he's just put it under his mattress every night, just flat as a pancake. And there's an art to that. I'm sure Big Poppy will tell you, like, there's an art to that. Staying ready, the routine that you have. Marco Luciano didn't have he had no idea how to DH.
Well, it's rare on. You see a 22-year-old DH anywhere at any level, right?
That's a good point. That's
very
really
rare.
That's a really good point.
I mean, yeah. A lot of times you have a DH who started his career probably out in the field somewhere, got older, and maybe you get like 32 years old, you lose some of that defensive ability, but your bat is so good that a team is willing to just use the DH spot on you. It's rare that you have a 22-year-old athletic freak like Lucio. I mean, he's an athletic freak, and you're DHing him. And your point about pinch hitters, there's a reason why they're so valuable to every big league team. Everyone would love to have a professional bat off the bench every single night, but to your point, it's not easy, and not every team has that. Because it's pretty rare to have a guy who can come off the bench cold and go deliver a big at-bat in a big moment down the stretch.
You said Lenny Harris, right?
No, but I was thinking of him.
He's first all time.
Lenny's number one.
I said Dave Hansen, and I think in my brain I meant Lenny Harris, but Dave Hansen is sixth. You mentioned John Vanderwall, who is seventh, and Mark Sweeney.
Mark Sweeney.
Oh.
Number two. All time, Manny Mota, as I mentioned, and you know the list is not deep. Matt Stairs is 16th all time, so you did a good job of hitting on some of those guys.
Is this most pinch hits ever?
All time, Lenny Harris with 212.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't wrap my head around
212 pinch hits.
Part,
yeah, that's crazy.
The hardest part about pinch hitting isn't going 0-60 and coming in the ninth against Trevor Hoffman. The hardest part about pinch hitting is wrapping your head around one at bat and having one at bat dictate your whole day, whether you're
a lot
happy
of pressure
or whether you're pissed off. And I couldn't do it mentally.
And then you probably spend the next 24 hours thinking about that one at-bat.
One at-bat determines. So if I'm leading the game off and I hit a ground ball to short, I got 3 or 4 more tries. If I pinch hit in the ninth and ground out to short or strike out, I got to go home and marinate in that one at-bat all day. Like, I guess a good pinch hitter is like a defensive back, right? Short memory, you get burned and you got to come right back. That's what a good pinch hitter does. So Lenny Harris, Mark Sweeney, Matt Stairs, John Vanderwall, these guys were talking about that in the National League when you had to pinch hit for the pitcher and there was the double switch, that there was value to have that guy on the bench. And those guys, by the way, great teammates. Mm. That's how you stick around too. Lenny Harris, 100% A-plus human being. And he could go up there and get a base hit off some guy throwing 100 right out of bed in the ninth inning. Like there's a talent to that. And along those lines, and the reason we're equating these two things together, there's a talent to DHing. There really is.
Yeah, and it's kind of being a pinch hitter 4 different times.
Yep.
And do you know how many pinch hits you had in your career? It's time to play FP's baseball reference.
Dibs diving through baseball reference.
Not many, too.
Yeah, 17.
Really?
17 at-bats?
17 hits.
Oh, wow.
As a pinch hitter. And you had one home run as a pinch hitter.
Against the Marlins, I was a Dodger. I told everybody in the clubhouse,
see,
if I pinch hit tonight, I'm going deep. I told all the clubbies, I said, I haven't played in a week. Screw Davey Johnson. He hasn't played me in a week. If I get in there tonight, I'm swinging as hard as I effing can, and I'm going deep. I go, remember I said this. So all of a sudden, Davey puts me up there in the eighth. I hit a tank, I think off of Mark Dempster or somebody.
I'll
like
look
that.
It up. And I love this game. This has been my favorite thing of the week.
I ran past everybody in the dugout. I didn't high-five anybody. And in Old Marlins Park, there was a tunnel. Mm. I ran down the tunnel into the clubhouse, and all the clubbies were jumping up and down. And I was high-fiving with all the clubbies. And I didn't have to go in the game, so I was popping beers in the clubhouse like in the seventh inning after I called my shot. That's how I remember that.
It's incredible, your memory, because it was at Florida.
It was at Marlins Park. I was a Dodger. I remember.
Yes, it was. And
it was a fastball first pitch right down the middle. I got all of it.
This doesn't matter to you, but it happened to have been on my birthday, August 15th.
I did it for you, Dibs.
And I appreciate that. And it was off Ryan Dempster.
Ryan Dempster, see?
Wow.
I told you, I got a weird memory when it comes to that stuff.
Incredibly weird memory.
I couldn't tell you what I had for lunch 2 days ago, but I remember stuff like that.
No,
my old producer in D.C. used to go to... He would would freak out. I'm like, do you remember that happened 4 years ago? Jason Worth hit a 2-2 slider, the same pitch off the same guy. And they would go get the video. And they're like, how do you remember this stuff? It's just baseball. Yeah. I can't remember anything else. It's crazy. I told you, I've been dinged up, man.
No, and you nailed it. And you actually were on the same team in the same lineup as one of my childhood friends, Chad Kruder. Shout out Fairfax, California.
Chad's a good dude.
Yeah, I've known Chad since I was like 4 years old.
He
anyway.
Coached at USC, right? He was their head baseball coach. For
I believe you because yeah. I believe everything you say because your memory is insane.
It's about someone in baseball.
Dude, seriously. Yeah. It's it.
Like, what'd you have for lunch today?
I don't know.
Anyway.
But to Marco Luciano's credit, I mean, you were talking about you go up, you strike out first at bat. You sit down for two or three innings. You go back up again. You strike out. You go back down for two or three innings. He comes up again, third at bat, a double the opposite way to right center field, and then he comes up again in the ninth and he gets pinch hit for. I imagine the difficulty in wiping those two strikeouts is tough. Getting the double has got to feel great. And then your spot in the order comes up in the ninth inning with the game on the line, down by two, runner on first with two outs. After your president of baseball operations says we're opening up opportunities for the youngsters here over the final 2 months and you get pinch hit for, I imagine that's difficult to go through as well, especially considering how the season has gone for a number of these youngsters. Luciano's been up before. We know the issues with, you know, his glove in the field. Luis Matos, NL Player of the Week, then goes 1-for-12 and gets sent back down. I imagine as well that adds an extra layer and dimension into it, FB and Dibs, because you just... You were successful. You hit the double the opposite way, and then you don't even get your last at bat in the ninth.
In matchups, you're down 5-1, and you know they go to a righty, so you go with Lamont Wade Jr. as a pinch hitter, who's you know great against righties, a left hand hitting bat. So if you're Luciano, you got to understand it. I don't know if it makes you feel any better knowing that, like your point is, you finally had a good at bat and you went opposite field, you hit a double, and you feel like okay. I'm DHing here with the big club. I'm not used to this, and I just delivered, and now I'm going to have to come out of the game. But you would expect that he's in the lineup again tonight as the DH. I would anticipate that.
He got pinch hit for in his major league debut. If you played for Gabe Kapler, you used to getting pinch hit for.
All the time.
Yeah. He's so used to it at this point. And I do think you got to go match up, Slade. When you're fighting for your life at the end of a game, you got to fire all your bullets if you're a manager. You got to get everybody. You got to get your matchups at the end, not in the fourth inning, but in the end. I had no problem with that last year.
But I think... Because my thought was, it goes back to some of the things that Farhan said yesterday, and we're opening up these opportunities for our youngsters to see what they got, and we think that pair that and, you know, pair Ramos and pair Fitzgerald and pair Bailey with this really good pitching staff, we got enough to make a run and go to the postseason. But it's kind of my frustration with where this team is right now. I feel like there is not a clear lane they're going down. You're trying to say, we're going to give the opportunity to the youth, and we're going to develop the youth and see what we got with the youth. And then you say, but 100% chance we still can make the postseason. And if you're trying to win a baseball game, I agree with you guys 100%. I agree. If you're trying to win a baseball game, put at the plate in the ninth inning, game on the line, whoever you think has the best chance to have a successful at bat. And that's probably Lamont Wade, a lefty against a righty, as opposed to Marco Luciano, a righty on a righty, a rookie, whatever the case is. Like, that makes sense. But... then I feel like it's a little deceitful to go out and say publicly, we're opening up all these opportunities for our youngsters. If you're trying to win, go out and win. But if you're trying to produce your talent and to develop your youngsters, that's a pretty valuable at-bat for a young guy to have in the ninth inning in a do-or-die spot.
They're trying to win, dude.
Yeah, which takes precedence over, I think, developing him by having him get an at-bat where you're down 5-2.
Just because you didn't get somebody in the trade deadline doesn't mean that Bob Melvin's sitting in the dugout going, I don't care if we win tonight, guys. Just go have fun.
And that's fine, but don't then tell me that the goal for the season is to develop your youngsters if your goal is still to try to win. That's fine. Go and try to win, but you're trying to serve two masters here. I don't know you can do both.
Yeah, you can do both in the ninth inning when you are down 5-2 and you got a runner on second base and you've got one of your best hitters, a lefty, going up against a right-hand reliever. That's a no-brainer. And I think if you didn't make that move, then what signal are you giving to your veterans? You're basically telling them at that point, we don't care about winning. And yes, you want to develop the youngsters, which is why Luciano gets the start at DH, and he will again tonight. But when you get into a spot where Lamont Wade as a lefty has a better advantage than your right-hand hitting, he's not a rookie, but young player, then maybe he gets a base hit and you keep the rally alive and now you get a chance to win a game. And next thing you know, you move up in the standings, and now the next game becomes more important for Luciano. So I don't think it's as simple as well, you're trying to serve both masters. I think you get in a spot where you're trying to win the game and you've got a good left-handed bat on the bench and you're down 5-2 and you've got a spot where he can come in and pinch hit for Luciano. He would have pinch hit for virtually anybody outside of Matt Chapman because nobody else could have played third at that spot. So that for me is not, you know, despiting Luciano in the interest of trying to win a game. You're just trying to win a game. And Luciano's development up to that point was you got 3 at-bats and you did great, kid. You went 1-for-3. You get the start again tonight.
Yeah, I get it. And I
just don't think we're at the point yet where you're going to like, okay, if you're 8 games out with 35 to go, maybe you approach it differently. But right now you're fighting for every possible win you can get.
I mean, what if Luciano puts together a 1-for-12 stretch the next 3 games and then you're desperately so trying to win baseball games. You're like, all right, we're going to start Mark Canha as the DH tonight.
Yeah, maybe he gets a game
and
off.
Marco,
that's okay.
You're done for a little bit.
I said this yesterday. I'll say it again. Opportunity is taking advantage of opportunity. So these guys, every time they get on the field, have to do something to play the next day. It's not like they're just going to play Luciano if he goes 1-for-20. He can sit on the bench. Like, you're getting opportunity to play. They're still trying to win. They're not waving the white flag. In September, if they're 8 games out of the wild card, Luciano probably gets that at bat. But they're still 3.5 games out yesterday or 4 games out, whatever it was before yesterday. What is it today? I didn't look.
5 games out.
Is it 5?
Yeah.
It's starting to get to that point where if it, you know, we get to August 20th and they're not in reach, then you go full scale development.
But there was a moment you brought up earlier in the show where after Luis Matos was the NL Player of the Week, whenever that was, early May, mid May, yep, whenever that was, he was NL Player of the Week, and then he goes 1-for-12 and gets sent back down. And I know this is not the same thing. You get pulled for one at bat late in a game.
Which is what any good manager would have done last night in all of baseball.
But we're hearing from club leadership that we're trying to develop all of our young talent here. We're trying to figure out what we have over the next 2 months. And I'm looking
figuring out what you have and developing young talent are two different things. Figuring out what you have is they play, they do well, they play. They play, they suck, they don't play. They play, they suck, they suck, they suck, they go back to Sacramento. That's how you find out what you have.
So if
you're still trying to win baseball games.
So if Luciano struggles for a week, you send them back down to AAA, you think?
Well, the rosters expand, but they only expand by like 2 guys now, right?
To September, there is no more AAA anyway. So, yeah. I mean, if you're talking about in the next 2 weeks, if he really struggles, then maybe you send him down for a week or two just to get, you know, refreshed, and then he comes right back up. But I don't think that you're in a spot now when you're 5 games out that you're going to send any of these guys down unless they really look completely lost and overmatched.
He's hitting .375 and we're talking about him struggling and going back to AAA. Like, here we
go. That's a hypothetical.
Well, yeah, but that's always the worst case scenario.
I know, like, FP loves my hypotheticals.
Jesus. Don't look at me with that. I'm Captain Positive over here.
Oh, yeah, what the hell's going on with you, James? Captain Positive for a week.
Unicorns and rainbows positive and we're all pooping jelly beans. But like, it's like every time we talk, it gets to the worst case scenario of all these guys sucking and complaining. And I find happiness and joy in sports. I did it for a living. I played for the team down the street. If I sound like a homer, I don't care what anybody thinks. I coach for the team down the street. I broadcast for the team down the street. I love being a Giant, and I'll always be a Giant. So if to sit here and bitch about sports and bitch about the team for 4 hours just isn't how I'm wired, dude.
I want to get into that coming up on the other side, because I've had that feeling about the Giants as well, and I want that feeling back. So let's get into that coming up on the other side. It's Willard and Dibs, Dan Dibley, FP Santangelo, Mark Randy with you. 1 hour down, 3 more hours to go here on 95.7 The Game. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. More Willard and Dibs coming up next on 95.7 The Game.